Hi, this is Adrienne Barbeau, Alice Cable from Swamp Thing, and Catwoman from Batman the Animated Series. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Perfect.
Welcome, fans of the Painted Paneled Pages. This is Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. It is once again time for a celebration. 2014 marks the 75th anniversary of the Dark Knight detective, Batman. That's right, 1939 saw the first publication of Bob Kane and Bill Finger's creation in Detective Comics, issue number 27, cover dated May 1939. Now, throughout the year, you're going to hear my conversations with the legendary talents who've brought the characters in the world of the Caped Crusader to life. Starting with today's show. Joining me in the lair is none other than renowned actress Adrienne Barbeau, who gave voice to the character of Catwoman on Batman the Animated Series. But Batman was not Adrienne's first foray into the four-color world of comic books. Let's take a brief look back at her illustrious career, and then I'll chat with the amazingly talented Adrienne Barbeau. It was not on the screen, but on the Broadway stage where Adrienne Barbeau first dazzled audiences with roles in Fiddler on the Roof and as the original Rizzo in Grease, a role which brought her a Tony nomination and a Theatre World Award. But it was executive producer Norman Lear's immensely successful All in the Family spinoff, Maude, that brought Adrienne's name to TV audiences nationwide.
And then there's Maude! That uncompromising, enterprising, anything but tranquilizing.
Adrienne followed up that star-making turn with numerous guest appearances on hit TV series and game shows, including my personal favorite, Match Game, before starring in director and then-husband John Carpenter's The Fog and the cult classic Escape from New York. But for comic book fans, Adrienne helped bring three favorites to life. Creepshow, an homage to 1950s horror comic books directed by George Romero and written by Stephen King, Swamp Thing, a Wes Craven adaptation of the DC Comics character created by writer Len Wein and artist Bernie Wrightson, and Adrienne provided the voice of Selina Kyle, Catwoman, on Batman the Animated Series. Well, our guest today is an actress and an author. She got her big break on the groundbreaking TV series Maude. She's gone on to appear in such shows as Babylon 5, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and she played Catwoman on Batman the Animated Series. Her feature films include The Fog, Escape from New York, and the cult classic Swamp Thing. And then there's Adrienne Barbeau. Adrienne, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
You know, I think the last part of the Maude theme song, which played endlessly in my head as a kid, that could probably be used to describe you as well. Uncompromising, enterprising, anything but tranquilizing. So right on, Adrienne Barbeau. That could probably be used to describe you as well. When you first got the role of Maude's daughter, Carol Trainor, did you realize the impact that that show was going to have?
No, not at all. I had been doing stage up until that point. I'd been on Broadway. I'd been in Fiddler on the Roof for a couple of years, and then I had originated the role of Rizzo in Grease. And so I worked at night and had been working at night since I was 15. I never watched television. When I first mentioned to friends of mine that I was going to meet this fellow Norman Lear, who had another show on television called All in the Family, they all said, "Oh my God, you know, that's a great show. That's, you know," but I'd never even seen All in the Family. So I had no idea the power of television, first of all, and then certainly the power of Norman's shows. And even when we started on Maude, no. Didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, it tackled so many tough topics. It was very political. It tackled abortion, drug use, alcoholism, domestic violence. I mean, strong stuff for a sitcom at the time.
Yes, although I guess All in the Family had sort of paved the way. I mean, but yes, We did. Norman was and still is, as he is the head of the People for the American Way, I think is the name of the organization that he founded many, many years ago. You know, he had a lot of strong feelings about a lot of issues, and Maud was a great way to get them out and get them heard. I mean, I think he always presented a balanced viewpoint, but the thing that made it so acceptable was that it was so funny. And so we got to say a lot of things about a lot of controversial topics that people might not have paid attention to in another format.
Yeah, I think that was the key too with All in the Family. It was funny, and he and Archie always got his comeuppance, so you could kind of get away with things, but I'm not sure you could do either of those shows today. Might not play as well. Hey, before we talk about your comic book theme projects, I have to say, anybody that knows me knows that I have an obsession, probably one that borders on unhealthy, with the 70s game show Match Game. Was there really as much drinking on set or behind the scenes as it appears when you watch the episodes?
Oh, Joe, I don't even remember that game. I mean, I did Pyramid, you know, that was the one that I remember, and that I'm known for. But Match Game, I don't, and if people were drinking, I didn't know about it. I don't drink, so I sure wasn't taking part. But
we have to remember Richard Dawson. I mean, you were seated right next to him, and he was kind of the Lothario of the set. Ever hit on you? Anything from Richard Dawson? Anything you'd like?
No, I don't think so. Chuck Bear, was it Chuck?
Are these
Chuck
stories
Barris?
All in our memory?
I did the pilot for the Gong Show, and Chuck Barris, I wouldn't say hit on me. He asked me out a couple of times.
Did you go out with him?
Not Richard. I don't remember.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, maybe it was an act, but you know, you watching these things now, it's still a huge hit on the Game Show Network, and it just seems like, you know, he would be there. But classic game show, and absolutely obsessed with it. If you don't mind, as we get into your comic book theme project, I'd like to play around a match game with you. I mean, you might not remember the show much, but mind playing a round of match game with me?
Well, you'll have to tell me how it played.
No worries.
I don't remember it at all.
You be the contestant.
The one that who was the host?
Gene Rayburn. It was Gene Rayburn. Yep.
I do remember. I have a visual of Gene. But I don't even remember. You say we were seated next to each other in a row. Is that what it was?
Yeah, Richard Dawson. You were on the bottom row of the panel, and Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Reilly on the top panel.
See, that sounds like Hollywood Squares to me.
No, it was much better than Hollywood Squares. much better.
Tell me how to play it. Well, I will try and play it.
I'll tell you what. You be the contestant, and I'll give you the word, and you see if you can match it. What I'm thinking of. You fill in the blank.
Okay,
the first one is Creep blank.
Show. Okay, I get it.
Wow, you're quick. Nice job. Creep Show, 1982. It's based on some of those old EC horror comics. You get to work with George Romero on that one.
Yes, I did.
Shot in Pittsburgh, too, correct?
We shot it in Pittsburgh, yeah.
My stomping grounds.
Is that where you're from?
Yeah, right outside of Pittsburgh. Originally.
Pittsburgh. It's one of my favorite cities. I've filmed there several times for George, and I've done. I did a production of Fiddler on the Roof there, and I love Pittsburgh.
What was it
and
like?
And my dear friend Tommy Atkins lives right outside Pittsburgh, so I'm all. Whenever I get a chance to go, I go back and visit with Tommy.
It was an anthology movie, so it was like several stories in there, and I think yours was The Crate, based on a short story by Stephen King, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Okay, what was that like to shoot that? I mean, because at that point, 82, you kind of were firmly entrenched at that point in the horror, science fiction genre, Escape from New York, The Fog, things like that. So what was it like to work with one of the horror masters?
George is fantastic. When I first got the script, I didn't know anything about George. I am not a horror fan. I doubt that I'd ever seen a horror film, you know, up until that point. And when
other
I
than The Fog, right, with your ex-husband.
Yes, which to me was more like a ghost story,
right,
as opposed to, you know, something that was as vile and as gruesome and horrendous as the script for Creepshow, which is how I read it, you know.
Yes.
I got the script and I thought, oh, I can't do this. This is so gory. This is terrible, you know. And John Carpenter, to whom I was married at the time, said, are you kidding me? You can't pass up an opportunity to work with George Romero. I mean, he is the master of horror. And Tom Atkins was already cast. Tom played the father in the interstitials, you know, in between the episodes. And Tom was a great friend, and so I called Tommy and I said, Tom, you know, I don't think I can do this. I mean, it's really gory and ooh, it's just, you know, it's so violent and everything. He said, no, you don't understand at all. It's, you know, it's going to be very stylized. George is doing it like a comic book. It's very funny. You've got to do it. So, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it is a comic book come to life.
Yeah. And I got there, and you know, I said to George, look, you know, I don't know, you know, I'm going to show you what I intend to do with this character, and if it's not right, you better send me home, because I really, you know, I'm not sure what's going on here. Again, you know, I've never liked alcohol, so I've never been drunk. I didn't, you know, it was like...
Certainly not a match game. We've established
far
that.
Right. It was far afield from me. But George was fantastic, and I owe the performance to George because she's so much bigger than one would be comfortable doing on screen, you know? I mean, she was really out there, and George just kept saying, no, you can go more, you can, you know, just go for it, you know? And she's one of my favorite characters now. I just love it.
I mean, looking back, were you just, I mean, did you become more comfortable as you were working with him, or, and how did his direction maybe compare to that of John Carpenter's?
Actually, George and John, there were more comparisons than dissimilarities, I believe. You know, they both knew what they wanted. They kept a very happy, contented set. It was a joy to go to work. Pretty much let me do what I wanted, and if it wasn't right, then they'd say, okay, no, let's try this, you know, but...
Yeah, it seemed like some of the things, you watch some of the behind-the-scenes stuff with your ex-husband, John, where he's talking about, you know, shooting Escape from New York and things like that. It seemed like he was so prepared that once you got there, that
too.
The actor... Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask was, are they just so well-prepared and set the stage for you as an actress that you can just go in and feel comfortable and not have to worry about any of the production side of it?
Yes, yes, yeah. They knew what they wanted, and they knew how to get it. And and they got it with grace and, you know, good humor.
Well, certainly some indelible characters and some great classic films came out of that because of those directors. Hey, you ready for the next round of Match Game here? Another
sure.
Super Match? See, it's all flooding back now.
This
all the memories are flooding.
This might be easier than answering your questions about the next
show itself.
Let's see.
All right, the next one on our next category on Match Game, we're going to have Swamp Blank.
Thing.
See how great you are at this? This is even better than Pyramid. You nail it every time. You know, you get the $5,000 every time. Swamp Thing, again, 1982. Also produced by Michael Uslan, who...
Yes, Michael Uslan and Ben Melnicker.
Yeah, and Michael had really... If you get a chance to read his book, I don't know if you have or not, but it's The Boy Who Loved Batman. He spent 10 years trying to bring Batman to life, and because of him, we've got the Batman franchises that we have today. But a lot of people don't realize that he was the one that kind of brought Swamp Thing to the screen as well. Did you get a chance to work directly with Michael?
He and Ben were on the set. I didn't have much direct contact with them. I don't
mostly
I don't
with Wes Craven.
Remember while we were filming,
right?
Yeah, we did have you know, the problem with Swamp Thing, as I say in the special material on the new Blu-ray, was that they just kept cutting the budget out from under Wes, And so the one man I do remember was the completion guarantor, who was also an actor in the film. And then also, it seems to me, one of the execs from the studio kept coming to the set, and they just kept saying, you know, you don't have that much money, you can't do that, you can't do that. And Wes was having to cut scenes right and left, and you know, throw out entire sequences. And I remember there was a scene where I had to pick up a fire extinguisher and or hit somebody over the head with it, or I can't remember what it was, but I mean, they, you know, they didn't even have a real fire extinguisher. And there was one day when we showed up on the set and the makeup trailer was gone because they hadn't paid the rent on it.
Wow.
So it was not, you know, it wasn't as easy a shoot as some of the others.
How were you first approached to play your character, Alice Cable, in Swamp Thing?
I just remember getting the script, which I thought was wonderful. Wes wrote just a wonderful script. I talk about it in my memoir, There Are Worse Things I Could Do, where I actually remember thinking, oh my God, this could be huge, you know, this could be as big as Star Wars. It was such a, I thought it was a wonderful script, you know, Beauty and the Beast and whatever. I didn't know anything about the comic book. I was not a, you know, I didn't read comic books. I certainly didn't read Swamp Thing. I think the agency just sent over the script and said, we've got an offer for you, and would you like to do it?
So, I mean, you weren't able to do any research then in the comic books or anything like that?
No, I don't think I did. I may not have even known it was a comic book. I just got this wonderful screenplay and said, yeah, I'll do this.
Again, creating another one of these classic characters, you're definitely not a damsel in distress in this movie.
No.
You've got brains, and you can handle yourself in a fight. You got a mean right hook. You got a mean knee, which takes one guy out at one point. And even in the fight scenes, it looks like when you get taken out, man, it looks like some of those shots really connect. I mean, describe some of the fight scenes that you had to go through, because, I mean, that had to be pretty intense.
I do remember thinking, you know, the stuntman that I was working with was, you know, he wasn't pulling any punches.
Especially when you get thrown into the water. I mean, that looks...
Yes, yeah.
And that's you going in, right?
Yes, that's me going in. Swamp Thing was the first time in my career that I realized stunts weren't just fantasy. And it was the day that we were doing a scene where I had to run. They were chasing me in the Jeep, I think, over sort of rocky terrain. And the stuntman came to me. I do remember some of the guys. I mean, one of the fellows, his whole leg just looked like raw hamburger meat. He had, I think he had been doing a fire stunt or something. You know, they used to sit around and compare injuries, and it was pretty eye-opening. But he said to me, okay, we're going to be behind you in the Jeep. If you fall, just don't move, and we won't run over you. And I thought, oh, my God, you mean there's that possibility?
This wasn't in the script.
Not running over me wasn't in the script, but I guess the fall was, now that I think about it. But, yeah, it was a hard shoot, because they didn't have the budget they needed, so we were working very, very long hours. I don't think I ever got to bed before 1, and, you know, up at 5, and it was hot and muggy, and there were chiggers and ticks and snakes, and the stuntman loved, you know, grabbing a snake and throwing it at me or throwing it over my shoulders or something. In the end, it worked.
We lost, unfortunately, Dick DeRock to cancer in 2009. For the most part, he was pretty much your leading man, because he takes over as Swamp Thing. About a half hour into the film. So did you get a sense that Ray Wise, who played Alec Holland, did you get a sense that he realized he wasn't going to be on screen with you much? That's why he makes a move on you so early in the film? I mean, within like 10 minutes, he's like planting a kiss on you.
Well, we have to have that to set up Swamp Thing.
That's right.
I mean, you know, it's a continuing emotional line, isn't it?
Ray gives way to Dick Duroc pretty quickly. What was it like to work with Dick Duroc? Because he just pulls off this performance that's really, you think he's in a rubber suit the whole time, but really the emotions come through in that.
He was a wonderful man. He was, in the first place, once they put Dick into the suit, they couldn't take him out. I mean, it was a nightmare. And so, you know, he was spending 8 and 12 hours on that set and with very few bathroom breaks. And of course, the costume was so poorly made, or so cheaply made, that it kept tearing and they'd have to fix it. And he really suffered for his art in that film. And always maintained his wonderful nature, and you know, never lost his patience, never lost his temper. He was lovely. He was just, couldn't have asked for a better person to be playing Swamp Thing.
And of course, the villain in the piece, played by Louis Jourdan, really amps that up to another level, I think.
Yes.
Just his presence in the film.
Yes.
What was it like to work with him, and just, he just brought so much to the proceedings.
Unfortunately, Mr. Jourdan's son had just died, and so he, you know, we had very little contact except when we were doing the scenes. He was, he was kept to himself, and he was in a lot of emotional pain, I'm sure. I'd have to go back and look at the film, but I don't remember how, we didn't have that many scenes together now that I think of it. I was, of course, a fan from Gigi and all of his wonderful films from his country, but we didn't have a real, there wasn't a lot of communication.
How much did shooting on location in South Carolina really not only add to the look of the film, but really help your performance?
It was everything. I mean, in much the same way that, being in Inverness and Point Reyes, I think the location of the fog is as much a character in the film as the swamp was in Swamp Thing. We could not have done that on a set. I mean, I can't imagine doing that on a set. I did do a film that took place in the swamps, a TV movie where a plane had gone down in the swamps, and we did do it on a set, and it wasn't the same, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just, and some of the cinematography in it really is incredible. And two, you think about this movie, you mentioned about the budget cuts and everything, but I think when you look at it as a whole, if this movie had been made in the 1930s by Universal, I think today it would be considered a classic. I mean, it really is a classic-type monster movie.
Well, I'd never thought of that, but I could see it, especially in black and white, and yeah. Well, I mean, it's Beauty and the Beast. It's Jean Cocteau, really, isn't it? I mean,
exactly. Were you ever approached about the sequel or the television series? Because your character makes it out at the end, so they did a follow-up a few years later?
No, never approached.
Any interest in it? I mean, did you see these things come out and just go, that would have been nice to... Or were you done in the swamp? You were done with the swamp.
I was done. I never saw the series, and I never saw the sequel. So no, I was done. I mean, on to the next, whatever the next was.
Well, it's a very cool film. I mean, if people haven't had a chance to see it yet, and it's certainly a darker take. The sequel was much lighter in tone. It was almost a spoof, but much darker take on Swamp Thing. And what did you learn from Wes Craven while you were working with him?
Well, again, Wes, all three of those directors that we've talked about, John Carpenter, George Romero, and Wes Craven, were all at the top of their craft, like the masters of their craft. They all shared similar personality traits to a certain extent. I mean, they all knew what they wanted. And Wes was really under the gun because he was having to make so many changes you know, last minute. I mean, literally throwing out complete scenes that, you know, meant that the next scene had to be rewritten so that it would make sense because we didn't see what he had intended us to see. And so he had his hands full. And the fact that he created what he ended up creating is a real tribute to his art, too, I think. But they all were very soft-spoken, you know, no screamers, no yellers. They knew what they wanted. And pretty much, again, unless something I did was way off base, sort of just kept a little eye on me and guided me. But let me do what I was bringing to it.
All right, our last match game, super match of the day. Are you ready for this one?
Yes.
All right, last one, so we're going to get this one, too.
I have a feeling I can give you the work before you even give me the match.
Cat Blank.
Yes, I was going to say woman.
There you go, Catwoman. You followed in the paw prints of Lee Merriweather, Eartha Kitt, Julie Newmar, and Michelle Pfeiffer. Did you draw anything from those performances, the live-action performances, for your voiceover on Batman the Animated Series?
No, I didn't. In fact, once again, I suppose I had seen Batman at some point when I was growing up, but obviously I didn't pay a lot of attention. I just, you know, that was sort of one of those things where I went into the voiceover agents and they said, okay, we've got this audition for you. And I put down maybe 8 lines, you know, and about a month later I got the call and they said, oh, they want you for Catwoman. And great, you know, but...
there's sort of that byplay, there's sort of that play between Batman and Selina Kyle where, you know, she's a villainess, but they're both kind of attracted to each other. Did you get a chance to work with the other actors, like Kevin Conroy?
Oh, yes. We all, we'd all show up for a taping, a recording session. And what was great was that you never knew who was going to be there when you showed up, whether it was going to be James Earl Jones or Mark Hamill or, you know, all these wonderful actors who were doing voice work. But Kevin was always there. I think I did one episode where I was up in Toronto doing a job, and so they had to, you know, they just recorded me separately. But whenever they could, they got as many of us in the script in a room together, and Andrea Romano was our director, and I could not have done it without Andrea, because voice acting is a whole different deal, you know.
How much does that help your performance when you're performing with the other actors and actresses, as opposed to just going in a room and recording the dialogue by yourself?
Oh, it's invaluable. I mean, it's so much better. I mean, it's just, well, it's like doing a film, you know, with another actor on the set. I mean, I've done films where I've done an entire scene and the other actor hasn't been there. And, it's the ideal. And especially with voice work, because you're, you know, a lot of your reaction is coming off of the way the other actor is delivering his lines, as opposed to, you know, you're just reading the other line. Okay, now I'm going to speak. So Kevin was always there, almost always there, I think, always there. And Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. And it was fun. You know, voice work is so much. I mean, I love it because you don't have to put on makeup. You don't have to get dressed. You can, you know, just pop in after you've been to the gym or whatever. It's a great gig.
Well, you certainly created a memorable performance as Selina Kyle in that. So what about your latest projects? What are you up to now? We mentioned you were an author. You have your autobiography, There Are Worse Things I Could Do. You've got your novels, Vampires of Hollywood, and
Vampires
your latest
of
one,
Hollywood,
Love Bites.
And the sequel, Love Bites, which is now available on Amazon as an ebook as well as hardcover. And I am currently working on the third. The series is about a scream queen, a Hollywood scream queen, who runs a film studio and also happens to be a 450-year-old Armenian vampire whose clan includes Orson Welles and Mary Pickford and Tyrone Power. They're all vampires. because, you know, it was the advent of the cinema that gave them their career. They shine on screen. And it's basically a comedy, romance, detective, vampire series, you know.
You never stray too far from the horror genre, right?
No, no. In fact, it was the first one was written originally for, you know, all the horror fans that attend the conventions and everything. And there's a lot of my career in it, because obviously I'm a scream queen and I'm Armenian, and they're a lot of fun. I'm really having a good time writing them. I just did an episode of Sons of Anarchy, and I'm off to do a little webisode called Hell's Kitty, which is quite well produced. It's an award-winning webisode. In fact, Lee Merriweather did it as well.
Playing the whole Catwoman theme coming in here.
Yes, well, it's about a cat who is possessed, I think. And so, you know, keeping busy.
Awesome.
I write
mixing
when
up
I'm
your
not
genres.
Acting, and I act when I'm not writing.
Excellent. Well, you've got a lot going on. So how can fans find out more about you, what conventions you've got going on, what projects you've got coming out, websites, Facebook, anything?
Yes. My Twitter account is abarbo, Twitter. My Twitter handle is abarbo. My Facebook page is Adrienne Barbeau, and it's got a picture of the latest cover for Love Bites, but it also has a picture of me, which I used as my author's photo. So I'm just smiling into the camera. I've got on a dark blue top, and there's a wood fence behind me, and that's mine. And my website is abarbeau.com. And I try to keep that up to date with, you know, upcoming appearances and things like that. You know, whenever I'm doing an appearance somewhere, I get it up there.
Well, perfect. If fans want to get those books signed, or maybe even a nice 8x10 of Swamp Thing signed as he's carrying you through the swamp, make sure you check out those websites and the Twitter page to find out where Adrienne Barbeau is going to appear next. And you know what? You've brought some of the most memorable characters to life on the small screen and on the big screen. Hopefully we'll get to maybe hear some more Catwoman in your future, if not in an animated series, maybe in a video game. That'd be kind of cool. You do a lot of that as well.
Actually, I did do Batman Arkham Asylum, but there was no Catwoman.
No Catwoman. I know.
We got to playing two other roles.
We've got to get Catwoman in one of these video games. We've got to bring that back. We'll put the word out for that. Adrienne Barbeau, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
That was a trip. I finally got to play Match Game with one of the original panelists. Okay, Adrienne, maybe your time sitting next to Richard Dawson wasn't so memorable, but I certainly enjoyed it. So much so that I posted your first appearance on the Comic Book Central Facebook page, so everyone go check that out and see the late, great Gene Rayburn welcome the new kid on the block, Adrienne Barbeau, to the Match Game. And Match Game fans know what that means. For some 2014, Adrienne, make sure you check out Criminal Minds on CBS April 2nd. It's the episode titled Blood Relations. Now, if you're listening to this podcast after that date, check the episode out at cbs.com. And if you're listening to the show way after that date, go get the DVD box set. What are you waiting for? It's Adrienne Barbeau. And you can take Adrienne along with you in book form. Her books, There Are Worse Things I Could Do, Vampires of Hollywood, and Love Bites are available on Amazon as ebooks or actual real books with paper and a cover and everything. They're kind of like tweets, but a lot longer, and you can carry them around with you. Ask your parents, young people. They'll know what those are. And for even more about all things Adrienne, go to abarbeau.com and Twitter at abarbeau, where you'll get the latest on the upcoming Hallmark movie, The Memory Book. Very busy lady. We appreciate her taking some time to join us on Comic Book Central today. And for all things Comic Book Central, including every episode with your favorite comic book celebrities, check out our website, comicbookcentral.net, or subscribe in iTunes. And thank you in advance for rating and reviewing the show. It just takes a minute. Very much appreciated. Tweet me and retweet me at ComicBookCTRL. And you can help get the word out about the show. Share The Lair on Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. When the episodes are posted, go ahead and like them, share them. It's really appreciated. We'll get the word out about the show. Again, thanks so much to everyone who's been doing that. Really appreciate that. Well, like a Marvel movie that has played its second post-credit scene, we have run out of time for today, True Believers. My thanks again to the lovely Adrienne Barbeau for spending some time with me in the lair talking Swamp Thing and Batman and Creepshow. Next week on Comic Book Central, what's this? Our esteemed host about to become catnip for his latest guest? The Princess of Plunder pilfering control of the podcast? How will Joe curtail this confounding catastrophe? Tune in next week, same bat time, same cat channel. It is the iconic actress, the first woman to portray a live-action Catwoman from the Batman television series. It's Julie Newmar. She is going to be right here in the lair. You don't want to miss it, folks. Until then, have a spectacular week. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported license. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Okay.